Today I'm going to talk about Star Wars. I must admit that this is not actually one of my academic interests, although I love Star Wars, and that's why I'm going to talk about it. Star Wars, of course, it's everywhere. You can't help but find it anywhere you go. In fact, it had been many months since I had been to the States, and I returned home for Christmas, and I was absolutely simultaneously amazed but disgusted at the amount of advertising and products. It was everywhere, and I thought it was bad during the prequel trilogy, but this is like nothing I've ever seen. So I wanted to discuss Disney's purchasing of this commodity, this product that they paid $4 billion for. And I really like this title, Your Destiny Lies With Me, because it really, I think, appeals or sort of speaks to the notion of what Disney is doing, their sort of strategy, trying to encourage new fans to get involved with the text, but also encouraging older, more established fans that really, you have no choice. You have to come with us. Of course, this is a line that Darth Vader uses. Also, I understand that this is sort of unorthodox, being an English speaker at a Francophone conference, so I wanted to draw attention to this sort of ridiculousness. I'm sure many of you might be familiar with the awkward penguin, attends a French conference, and presents in English. And of course, this is already on my Facebook page, accumulating likes as we speak. So first, when it comes to fandom, like I said, I don't study fandom, but many of my colleagues do study fandom, and I spoke to them recently at the SCMS conference just to get an idea for what I wanted to do with this presentation. And it always goes back to, for me, ontological security. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this phrase, but it was something that was used by Anthony Giddens to describe order and continuity as it concerns an individual's experience. The best way I could think of it is just think of the everyday minutiae of our lives that allow for our worldhood to manifest and to remain sort of concrete. The most obvious things that I can think of is when you wake up in the morning, you perform similar activities. You drink coffee, you brush your teeth, you take a shower, and then worldhood can become somewhat fractured, say, if you have run out of coffee. The routine that you've established in your everyday life, for the most part, needs some sort of revising. Matt Hills, an academic at Aberystwyth University in Wales, has discussed ontological security as it concerns the fan's investment with the world of the story and cohesive narrative continuity. So fans, in a sense, what they desire is, you could say continuity, but consistency. They have an understanding of what that world is, and it can, of course, become fractured. Some examples, I think, in the Star Wars universe, for instance, for those of you that like the text, I'm sure you are familiar with Yoda and the lines that he speaks to Luke in Empire Strikes Back. He talks about the Force being something that is around us, it binds us, draws the galaxy together. I thought about doing a Yoda interpretation, but if that fell flat, I would be so completely embarrassed. So instead, I'll just draw attention to what I wanted to do, but decided not to. And of course, maybe you're familiar with Episode 1, when Qui-Gon Jinn tells Obi-Wan that Anakin has a high midichlorian count, and so the Force is no longer this mystical thing that surrounds us and binds us and draws the galaxy together. Instead, it's about biology. So this, of course, really screws up everything. The idea of what the Force was becomes fractured. Another good example of this is Leia's mother. When Leia describes to Luke what her mother looks like, she has no idea what she looks like. She died. Padme, or Natalie Portman, dies before Leia has any idea of what she looks like. So these are sort of some examples in the Star Wars universe where the fans get really angry because that continuity is fractured. Another real example of what can cause problems in one's ontological continuity concerns the Star Wars expanded universe. Of course, Star Wars is more than just films. It's more than just TV shows, even though that's what we see. It's also books, comics, video games. And I really like this quote by Mr. George Lucas. After Star Wars was released, it became apparent that my story, however many films it took to tell, three too many, was only one of thousands that could be told about the characters who inhabit its galaxy. But these were not stories that I was destined to tell. Instead, they would spring from the imagination of other writers, inspired by the glimpse of a galaxy that Star Wars provided. Today, it is an amazing, if unexpected, legacy of Star Wars that so many gifted writers are contributing new stories to the saga. So one of the reasons why I say this can sort of caused controversy or sort of caused some problems with one's ontological security is because the galaxy becomes so large, so expansive, so deep. The relationships between characters are so rich and so diverse. The galaxy grows to heights and across many mediums that it really becomes impossible to consume all the text, to have a really firm grasp of what everything is. So some good examples of this is you have the New Jedi Order. This is quite a nice trilogy, the Thrawn trilogy, but also video games. It expands into many, many arenas where there's characters that fans fall in love with. And so in a way to make sense of this, in a way what they do is they gather together and they establish what you could call a canonical hierarchy with Boss George at the top, of course. So the G canon. And this, of course, is not something that I guess most regular folk would know about. This is, of course, conversations taking place in the fan community. You have George Lucas canon. This, of course, concerns things with his name on it, the films, and maybe the TV shows as well. Television canon after that. Then continuity canon, things that bridge it together, something like a video game. Secondary canon would be maybe something like a board game of some kind or something like Battlefront. Then you have the non-canon. Things like the holiday special that most Star Wars fans are trying to put out of their memory. Things that are secondary that really, like Legos. Non-canon would also be considered whatever I do with my toys as well. Obviously, I can take these action figures and create my own narratives with them if I want to. Well, no one is going to say that's canon on a Star Wars message board. Behind all this interest, really, it works in two ways for me. One, it puts Lucas as the position of power. He is in charge. Whatever he says at the top, that goes. And Star Wars fans have to deal, of course, with the presence of Jar Jar Binks and other sort of negative things that this new trilogy or the middle trilogy has given us. But also, there's a sort of interest to build status amongst the fan community. Bourdieu's notion of cultural capital is very prominent in a fan community, but also to show off knowledge. Another thing that canon does is it allows new fans to get involved. Where do you start? If you're a Star Wars fan or you want to be a fan, you're interested, you're not going to start with Battlefront, although some do, of course. Most likely what you will do is start at the top. You're going to see the films because this is what's out in the open. It's what's easy to access, but at the same time, it is generally what is most talked about. So there's many things to think about when you discuss how canon is established. But for me, the Star Wars universe is quite multi-layered. Fans can consume text really at their leisure. Text exists in this expanded universe to enrich the primary text, the text at the top. What you find in a lot of these texts is a mix of episodic attributes and also seriality. They all bridge together, but they have their self-contained episodes. Anyone can choose a text, but the interesting thing is you don't really have to read them all, to consume them all. They're all somewhat self-contained. For instance, I love playing video games, and I read some of the books, but I never read the Dark Horse comic series of Star Wars. And interestingly enough, when I say that these episodes are sort of self-contained, you have this new character, Dash Rendar, from the 1995 novel, Shadows of the Empire, but also a video game, very, very successful video game. At the end, Dash Rendar, he survives, but he doesn't tell anyone. Everyone thinks he dies. So, Captain, I don't understand. Why do you want the others to know we survived? Why do you not want them to know we survived? So there's no questions left unanswered. We can move on. We know it's self-contained, but for me, it enriches the narrative of Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. But at the same time, Dash Rendar becomes part of my canonical Star Wars. He means something to me as a character, and he was so widely accepted by so many other people that Lucas put his ship, when he was tinkering with the special edition, he puts the Outrider in A New Hope. You just see it sort of flying off in the distance. So, of course, Lucas borrowing what the fans like. Well, Disney, in their purchasing of this narrative or this commodity, in a way, you have to remember, they paid $4 billion for this thing. So, they have to make it worth something. What I see in this, and of course, this is conversations with fans and colleagues who are into Star Wars, is really the need to take control. Like I said, they have to take advantage of this. You need to have new content rather than just rehash the old stuff. What you need to do is, of course, create new things for fans to become involved in. So the idea is abandon the hierarchy, destroy it, get rid of it. So you can establish more or less your own foundation. Essentially, what they've decided to do is wipe the slate clean, except for the films. So let's think about what they're doing. It's sort of a soft reboot of the universe. Now, a full-on reboot would be something like our three Spider-Man movies. Entirely different universes. It's like when you reset your computer from scratch. You have a foundation to play with, but the universe itself is completely wiped out. None of the Spider-Man universes are connected. Now, something like Star Trek, the new J.J. Abrams Star Trek, this is not a reboot because both universes still exist. So for the original fans, they still have their Captain Kirk of old, but they also now have young Captain Kirk, these alternative timelines. But this is a soft reboot. You keep some things, but you maintain, or you destroy everything, but maintain a foundation. Films, recent television, and one Darth Maul comic. Darth Maul is sort of like the guy that most fans point to as, this was what Lucas did right, except killing him. Of course, they brought him back. Now, what do you do with all these comics? I mean, people are really attached to this. Like, when Abrams made Star Trek, it was quite a brilliant stroke because he satisfied the fans who really loved the old ones by not destroying that narrative or that universe. So what you do is you rebrand the expanded universe as legends. Well, what is a legend? They even speak to this in the Star Wars film. Rey says that whole thing about Luke Skywalker, I thought he was just a myth. Well now, I mean, it's a massive galaxy. Even though everything revolves around one or two families, it is a big place. And I swear, I'm just convinced one of these days that Disney is going to merge like Captain America meets Darth Vader. It's gonna happen. It will happen. Just like, you know, it's like Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. We will see this movie, Darth Vader Civil War or something. We'll see. So my thinking is with this Legends, if you listen to some of their interviews, they've talked about it can be like King Arthur. You know, King Arthur, we talk about it like it's real. But come on, we know it's most likely not real. Something like Legends, we can say, well, word gets out. Doesn't necessarily mean it's not real. It's just a myth. It's a legend. It still takes life. You know, legends still, of course, have life. But the idea is also, from a business standpoint, to maintain continuity for Disney, Star Wars, and future products moving forward. But also, when you think about the universe, the Star Wars universe, it's really, really big. So when Disney starts over, what they're trying to do is say, listen, you can just come with us. And it allows new audiences to engage with now what is a linear text. So I just want to show a couple of fan responses. I really like these things. It's really interesting how heated everyone gets on these message boards. I agree with this decision. The EU has become a bit convoluted. That doesn't mean it wasn't enjoyable, but there needs to be consistency and continuity to continue the story arc properly. I think he made a spelling mistake. And here we have on YouTube, all jokes aside, this reminds me of communists and other totalitarian regimes taking over and trying to erase history. So George Lucas, Disney is clearly Fidel, Castro, Che Guevara mixed together. I love these guys, they're great. The fans, I mean. Disney's Force Awakens is plagiarism. The creeps just don't want to pay royalties to the EU creators. Their film is a slap in the face to true Star Wars fans, and I don't support it. I love this sort of mouse click, you know, this sort of solidarity where everyone puts their foot down. But, you know, obviously someone agrees. There's four replies, likes, etc. Just to give you an idea of how what people are thinking. So Disney's strategy, the way I looked at it is I've seen all sorts of books, things that have come out. What it seems like they're doing is they're focusing on one text, The Force Awakens. You know, it's the foundational product moving forward. You're trying to build an audience around this text. New people, for me, I abandoned Star Wars after the last trilogy because it was rubbish. I mean, I gave up on Star Wars. To me, I had no interest. In a way, my cultural capital saying I like Star Wars, why? People are like, it's no big deal. But also, the journey to The Force Awakens, the idea is if you're an older fan, it's an invitation. Come with us. It's a journey to something new, something great. We are inviting you along. You're on a new journey together with the same characters you love. There is no Anakin Skywalker. There is no Boss Nass we'll just go with Jar Jar. He's always a good scapegoat. And this journey, it's about bringing everyone back into the fold. We're gonna try to make amends, and we want you to be here with us. And so some of the things that they put out I found really interesting. So you can see all the top, they all have the Journey to the Force Awakens. It's all part of this advertising campaign. The war is not over, Shattered Empire, and even something for kids. So you're inviting people of all ages, but also you're introducing a new planet. But this is what I find really interesting. Now that Disney has taken over this, everything you absolutely need to know, according to Disney, now that it's our product, what you need to know is not the expanded universe, we'll call it Legends, but in a way it's reaffirming that rebranding. And I really love this 100 defining moments. Let's define Star Wars based on what we think it is. And interestingly enough, in some of these texts, what they're doing is they sort of begin to drop hints about characters. So, hold on, let me go back. So this, you're introduced to Oscar Isaac's parents in this text, in this Shattered Empire, as a way to lead you in to the new film. But also, what I found really fascinating about the film is I didn't love it. I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it. I was just happy that it wasn't the prequel trilogy. Is that the film is not an end game. While they're saying it's the journey to The Force Awakens, there will be much after. The Force Awakens has some interesting moments in it. I think it's a rather sloppy film from a narrative standpoint. We don't really know anything about Oscar Isaac's character. He just sort of is there and then he disappears and he comes back later. But C-3PO just like waves around, I have a red arm and this way you didn't recognize me. So what Disney then began to do in their marketing campaign is drop hints to encourage fan speculation about these characters, about these issues. Okay. So 3PO, they say, well, why does 3PO have a red arm? And they sort of tie it into the fact that the First Order, everything is red. They all have a red sort of like insignia. So fans begin to discuss, maybe 3PO went on some undercover mission and became one of them for a while and then came back. Well, then they release this comic and it says, now you'll know. Read the comic and you'll know why he has a red arm. Or read Poe Dameron, find out more about him. Find out exactly what his motivations are, why he and Leia have such a strong relationship. And even in this new novel that came out called Bloodline, some of the story ideas and elements in this novel came straight from Rian Johnson, the director of the forthcoming Episode 8. We are indebted to him for his creativity and generosity. So I'm just gonna, is this a spoiler-free classroom? Because I already know one of the plot lines for Episode 8. So I'm not going to say anything, but Leia is going to have this little storyline in Episode 8. And I'm pretty sure that it's going to be very shallow unless you have read the book, because this is, of course, what's happening with the texts that give sort of weight to what happened in Episode 7. So instead of the expanded universe, where you could watch these texts and you could just leave them afterwards, and the original, like the sort of hierarchy stuff, at the top made sense without them, we're sort of moving to this new era, I think, where texts are intertwining across mediums, and that's nothing new, of course. I mean, the Matrix, the Animatrix, I think really set a standard for that idea. But now I think you really need to see all the texts for the films to make really a lot of sense in a very meaningful way. The Force Awakens did this quite well. For instance, we're introduced to the First Order. Well, who is this? Why not just use the Empire? I mean, obviously this empire could come back. Not everybody died in the second Death Star. The Force Awakens leaves us with many open questions. And at the same time, I just saw Captain America, Civil War. And to me, this was a disaster of a film. I mean, it sucked. It was really bad. Because nothing made, I mean, if you just walk into this movie, it's impossible to make sense. My girlfriend had no idea what was happening, and I just finally leaned over and I said, you may take a nap if you want. And she was, thank you. Okay. So the balance that we had seen between seriality and episodicness, I really think is sort of disappearing in these large texts. And exposition, in a way, is being sort of thrown out the window. We're just throwing you into the galaxy, and we expect you to sort of have an idea of what's happening, or just watch it and get it over with, the end. Another way that they're inviting the fans back, or these new fans, and I just wanted to mention this briefly, is Lucasfilm has sort of mined areas that were incomplete. For instance, I mentioned Leia's mother. So in Leia's comic, Leia has her own comic, she goes walking on Naboo and she sees a statue of her mother. And because Leia is force sensitive, the statue speaks to her. And of course, now this is answered. Now we know why her mother Now we know why she looks at her mother. But one of the great sort of plot holes for me is, how does Darth Vader know so much about Luke Skywalker in episode 5? Well, now we know, because of Star Wars number 1, the Marvel comic, answers that. The Adventures of Luke, we see their first encounter. Vader, number 1, they're all intertwined. What happens to the Jedi after episode 3? In a sense, what they're trying to do is answer fans' questions. More or less, the questions that they really, really wanted to know. Now, something that I'm really more interested in, more so than the fandom idea, is this idea of mobile consumption. All of these sort of texts have been made for the mobile. And I really like this idea of this stormtrooper metaphor. You can consume the text as you go. There's really no excuse. Why haven't you read the text? If you are a fan, everything should be easily accessible. And I really like this picture that they have on the Star Wars website, because in a way, as we learned about stormtroopers in the last movie, is they are conditioned to be something. Finn, the FN-2187, showing my nerdity here, discusses that they train you. They sort of neuter you. They turn you into this, or they raise you to be a certain way. And what I sort of see with this new Disney marketing strategy is something relatively similar. Get in line and, you know, hold rank together. If you really like Star Wars, you must be loyal to the product. So some conclusions is Disney really understands the necessity for points of entry. A point of entry is a moment in a text where fans can jump in and become involved, where they don't necessarily need a lot of backstory. The aligning of content, this is what they're discussing out in the open. We're going to align content together, but let's be honest, what they're really doing is promoting their own material. It's a marketing strategy. But also the attentiveness to audience, hook points. How can we bring people in? We can't just tell them, we have to entice them. So paying attention to things like Leia's mother, the relationship between Luke and Vader, the stormtrooper metaphor, fall in line. We are going to tell you what is important about Star Wars, and we want you to come along with us. If not, then we won't. Then you will be confused. Because, I mean, I saw The Force Awakens, and I had many questions. And I'm a Star Wars fan. But for me, also, the most important thing is the spirit of fandom. What's really interesting about being a fan is this difference of opinion. You know, when we can agree or disagree about what is canonical or what is important about a text, intersecting with this ontological security, because whenever your ontological security is fractured, this is when you really notice sort of the simple things in life, the importance of simple things. Giddens likes to speak of, you know, like the toothbrush. If your toothbrush is empty or broken, well, I don't know if toothbrushes break, but if you're out of toothpaste, you're going to have to be wary of how close you get to people for the whole day until you drink coffee or something. So when this is fractured, you start to notice things about what's important to you in your world. And so these difference of opinion, this is really where these conversations arise. And while I must admit I really like what Disney is doing with the Star Wars story, I also understand that if I really want to, you know, be a fan or understand what's happening moving forward, I will have to consume more texts and have more conversations about what is really essential about this universe. Merci.